This episode is sponsored by AdamandEve.com. Type in the offer code SEXNERD at checkout, and guess what? You get so many things, it's kind of amazing. So I highly recommend you do that, because you get 50% off one item. And I'm going to tell you what I think it should be this week. 3 free DVDs, which is awesome, because there's always that one moment where it's kind of cool, and you're like, wow, I'm really turned on right now. Yes, it usually is. There usually is. And you get free shipping. Oh, right. And there's also an extra special secret gift. I don't know what it is, but I'm really curious. So let me know. I want to know. Maybe I should buy something. What I was going to tell you about, because I was flipping through their website and checking things out, because I like to shop. And for $69.95, they've got the Sports Sheets Door Jam Sling. This puppy comes out of the box and you're like, I have no idea what to do with this. And then you just unravel it and you get these two pegs and you throw it over at the top of a door, you shut the door, and you know what you have now? A sex swing. You don't have to drill anything. It's awesome, and it feels really good to have sex with it. So to recap, you get 4 awesome things if you go to adamandeve.com. You get 50% off one item, you get 3 free DVDs, free shipping, and a super secret gift. Super cool. And it also feels like a hug to us here at Sex Nerd Sandra, because you supporting us, we really appreciate it. When I say we, I mean Dave and me, and sometimes I just mean me. Shut up, Dave. Anyway, adamandeve.com. Do it. Offer code SEXNERD.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Sex Nerds, hello. Welcome. Guess what I did, Dave?
What'd you do, Dave?
The last 4 days, I've been cramming my mind full of sex nerdery at the sex
science.
Is that what
you call it?
Yeah, that's what we call it. It's real kinky. No, I was at the Western Region Quad S Conference, which is the Society for the Scientific Study of Sexuality.
Okay.
And which for me is like weekend grad school, because it's, I will just sit there, like where everyone else is just sort of taking really relaxed notes or just listening, I will sit there with my laptop and just like click, 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 and like write down as much as I can from the slides and from what people are saying.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I am like the person in the corner just like
stenographer.
Totally. I'm total. Conference. Yeah. I'm kind of a conference whore. But I was hanging out with some friends last night, and I was holding my iPhone, and I kept dropping it. And I never drop my phone. I'm like, don't drop your phone, don't drop your phone.
Was it just heavy from all the information in it?
No, I realized after the second drop that
you're typing.
I had conference grip. Like, I just couldn't.
Conference grip? Oh, wow.
Like, my hands are exhausted.
What a developed world we live in. Oh, my hands from this conference that I learned so much at.
Can I tell you some stuff that I learned?
Hey, sure.
Dave's just like, you know what? I'm just kicking it.
I walked here. I'm having a great day.
Okay. First of all, well, there's so many things. Where do I even start? Okay. So, first of all, there is a guy named John Gottman who this woman, Dr. Joy Swan, presented that there's an algorithm for marriage. That this guy, Gottman, basically studied married couples and interviewed them for over 30 years and figured out that people have 3 types of conflict, ways that they deal with conflict. And there is, what are they? There one is volatile, where you're just like, and you blow up and, you know, it's very passionate and you guys scream at each other and you have sex and then it's just lots of passion, but lots of screaming.
Okay.
There's that one. And then there's conflict resolution. That's actually not the word. Do I have my notes? Oh my God, there's so many notes. I can't even find this. But there's one where like, you know, let's talk about this. Let's, you know, everything's going to be okay. Let's figure this out, guys. There's that
sure.
one. Then there's conflict avoidant, where people just break, you know, just like shut down and go away. Right.
Right.
And of course, when you're at a conference, even though you're learning about how to help other people, you're also just doing self-therapy at the same time.
So always.
Like, which one am I? I think I'm more into conflict resolution, but I may be avoidant. Because sometimes I just
I'm all
down.
3, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I do all 3. Totally depends on the moment.
So it turns out that John Gottman can, by watching one conflict between a married couple, guesstimate with a 90% accuracy if they're going to stay together or not. By how
Whoa. Okay.
So the important thing is not that you stop being volatile and and talk about it or what. But it's important that the two people in the relationship have the same conflict styles. So if you're with another volatile person, that's okay. Work it out. Scream. Do your thing. But it's just that as long as you match, so that let's say I want to talk about it, but I'm dating someone who's conflict avoidant. Well, that's going to be difficult because they're going to want to just shut down and go away.
Sure.
No. And in my opinion, you can also train yourself to be a different style in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's just, I found that fascinating.
It is fascinating. I take issue with some of that for sure. I mean, which is difficult for me because I'm not an expert and I haven't done this research. Mm-hmm. But I have a big problem with, like, I think that's totally true. I think that that you need to be able to deal with and react in the same way as your partner or you'll feel unfulfilled, you know? I have dated, probably by and large, avoidant women. And I'm conflict resolution most of the time, unless it's not getting resolved and then quite volatile, which hopefully ends in sex, because otherwise it's just me like in my yard, like, why?
No boombox, just no in the yard.
Yeah, with my hands in the air, like kicking stuff that doesn't exist. But I have a big problem with volatile people. I grew up in a house like that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think, I don't agree with anyone ever saying that it's okay for two people to be volatile. I think that they should. This is a totally different issue, I realize, but you said that and I thought, please never tell anyone to do that because right. They might have children and that's bad.
Well, I think unhealthy yelling and screaming and fighting, that is never a good idea. But if you want to just really just butt heads for a bit and not necessarily be calm and to run and talk it out, but just really like kind of have it out a bit.
Sure.
It doesn't mean you're being... you get to be abusive or
disrespectful. That's a good point, actually. Yeah.
So, but yeah, thank you for pointing that out. Cause yeah, I don't want you to be scary
ever. Yeah.
Yeah. But now we know what style you shouldn't date.
Yeah. All three.
All three. Anyway, so that was really exciting. And by the way, I recorded several shorter interviews while I was there. So in the coming weeks, you'll be hearing one on bisexuality and one on how to talk to your kids about sex and one on vaginal pain, which is a whole thing. Actually, just general genital pain. And well, there's fascinating stuff about tension and whatnot that we hold in our genital regions. And I learned all this stuff about anatomy. Anyway, I can't get
into it. Like a hernia?
Well, then there's that. And hernias, well, actually, I guess more hemorrhoids. Hernias are a little bit more like, all right, are we talking?
Well, they are like abdominal.
Right.
But it feels, I mean, I've got what I think is approaching a hernia. And it feels like your balls are going away.
Ow.
Like they're angry at you. Yeah, it's terrible.
Okay. Oh, yeah, there's different kinds of hernias. That's true. There's one that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's. Believe me, I want to talk about all these things that are.
Can we have a hernia episode, please? A full hour of hernias.
Dude, I need to really meet some doctors in the area to bring them in here because I want to talk about all that stuff. Like,
well, what were you saying about tension kept in the.
We had a physical therapist come in and talk about. She had so much information about. And just because, you know, you kind of gloss over certain bits of anatomy in the pelvis. So, like, I know things about pelvic anatomy, but, I mean, she knew everything. She knew every crevice of everything and how they related to each other.
Wow, I want to talk to this person.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, what can you give us a taste, as it were?
No, because that's going to be a whole other episode.
Oh, my God.
No.
Y'all should listen in the future.
And actually, because this is a sex science conference, lots of people were presenting science and their research. I realized I want to do a survey of our listeners. Like, I want to do, like, an in-depth like Survey Monkey situation where listeners go and so I can find out like who are we? Who are sex nerds? Who are people that would listen to a podcast? I mean, how many of you are males, females, trans? How many of you gay, straight, bi?
Oh, definitely. Pan? Yeah, I want to know.
But also preferences.
How many kids?
How many kids?
How many kids? Hopefully zero. Listen.
Yeah, and I mean, it's sort of like a sex nerd census. You know, oh, I'll call it that, the sex nerd census. And then we can have a show called that, and then we can talk about it. And then I can extrapolate, like, information from the details. Oh, my God, it's so hot.
This is what happens inside Sandra's brain all day. I just saw the process of that thought.
Oh, it's so good.
No
anyway. hey, you know what? It's my show.
It's my show.
Okay. All right. Another session that we had was all about prostate pleasure and health, and how people have an issue with talking about that because there's all these feelings around like how it's not okay for a lot of guys, especially if they're straight, right? And this amazing bit of knowledge came out, and this was by Dr. Susan Stieritz and Jonathan Branfman, both really sweet people, Dr. Susan Stieritz and Jonathan Branfman. And they were from St. Louis at Washington University, and they did studies, and they found out that when it comes to straight men's, like male bodies, guys, and how they perceive their erogenous zones, like where is it sexy and pleasurable to touch on my body? When it came to neck and shoulders, ass, butt cheeks, thighs, chest, nipples, different areas of the body, straight men marked everything fairly low on erogenous zone except the penis and balls. Like,
yeah, that makes sense.
But I've had this idea before that, straight men, I'll just notice when I'm dating a straight man, like, you have no sense that when I touch you like this, that could be pleasure and that is okay. Or like your arms or your feet, like.
Sure. Yeah. It's a societal thing too, I think.
Totally. I mean, there's so many reasons why, but the fact is I've never actually seen that in a study. And that's why it's important for people for us to fund sexual research so that we understand ourselves. And then gay men were like, oh yeah, nipples, great. You know, this, great. Everything's great. You know, like there's all this, like my body is a play zone.
Yeah, I wonder what that is. I wonder if that's like, if it takes a more open-minded person to come out, like you have to put yourself into a more open-minded world, or if it's just that you have more feminine characteristics generally if you're a homosexual male.
Oh, I don't think that's at all. I think gay men live outside. Like they're already in a place where they can't explore what it means to be okay by society. They're just sort of doing their own thing. So they have a lot more freedom, whereas straight men are very much, like we talked, the man box.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's like no one's given straight men permission that, yeah, I can lick the inside of your elbow and you may get a chill and that may be pleasurable. Like, what?
The other thing that I wonder is how many of those... I find certain surveys dubious because I'm sure plenty of those guys have experienced a good sensation with a girl touching their arm or their butt or whatever. But you're getting a survey like, not my dick feels good, only my dick, just my dick, I'm a man, own a truck, eat meat, I'm a man. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to project this. I wonder if there would be a way to get people to be truly honest.
About what they find.
Yeah, well, especially if it's societal pressure, like you can't, part of it is not being able to admit it, you know?
Well, I would love to get either Jonathan or Susan on the show at some point so we can talk about this. I may have to start doing phone interviews because there's so many amazing people all around the country that I want to talk to. But yeah, we can find out about how they conducted their research and all that. I have the slides. They just emailed them to me, so I have all the juicy information. But I'm sure we're going to talk more butt fun stuff in the future. Oh, I didn't even get to the point that was really exciting that Dr. Susan Stieritz pointed out, is that when it comes to like how society frames our genitals, beautifully framed, in the 40s and 50s, if you enjoyed clitoral stimulation as a woman, you were considered a lesbian.
What?
Because when Freud was talking about sexuality, he said, and we still feel like this, like, you can only have vaginal orgasms. That is the true orgasm. Like, I can have clit orgasms, but I can't have vaginal orgasms. What's wrong with me?
Wait, really?
Yeah, so Freud had said that the mature orgasm is the vaginal orgasm, right?
Okay.
Now we're all clit-centric, like, woo, clits. Clits are fun.
Finish, and then I have some questions.
So just that was how, like, clitoral pleasure was something that was way outside the mainstream and was considered something lesbian.
Okay.
So you can imagine if you find in the 40s, like, as a female... Oh my God, I like this. Oh my God, am I gay? Am I a lesbian? Like, oh shit. Like, I like my clit touch. I better not touch my clit. Oh, but that's the part that feels really good. Now we're like, dude, clit's awesome. And I'm straight. Well, whatever. The thing is now the same thing is happening with the prostate, where it's a pleasurable place. But if you like it, a guy might fear that he's gay. And I have talked to men that have that fear, like, oh my God, I love women, I'm sleeping with them, I'm doing all this stuff, but oh my God, that one time. Fear. Yeah.
I have it for sure.
Yeah.
I don't want to, but it's there.
Totally. And when this woman teaches her students about the clit and society's perception of the clit, and they learn, like, that's basically what society's doing with the prostate. And when, like, you frame it like that as an educator, it really helps normalize the fact that our bodies are here for our pleasure, and nothing you're going to feel in your body is going to change your orientation. You know, like, it's just not connected. It would be really strange if someone, like, you know, touched
well,
me
right. But that's also assuming orientation is a linear thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another idea that we need to discount, hopefully.
Or like a binary, like you're this or you're that.
Yeah, binary is a, linear is not the word.
Well,
binary is correct. You're right.
No, it's okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's, what is it, the Kinsey scale? I don't know.
Kinsey scale, yeah. 0 to 6.
Sure. You could be, I don't know, you could completely love women and then occasionally masturbate to photos of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then you're just whatever that is, and who cares? You like
Schwartz oriented?
Well, yeah, a little dab of Schwartz. I don't know. I talked to a friend this weekend who said that that he is completely straight. Like, he only dates women, only has sex with women, but when he's very depressed, he masturbates to gay porn.
Awesome,
because it's taboo.
Ooh.
Isn't that fascinating?
That's fascinating. But when I'm having a hard time coming, sometimes I go to something that's more taboo or fucked up than normal.
Yeah, no, I totally get that phenomenon. I don't have it, though. Yeah, that's just really interesting to me.
Yeah.
You're getting off on the thing that you don't think that you should be doing.
Right.
It has nothing to do with outside stimuli. It's like, this is fucked up. I'm getting off on the fact that I'm a loser.
Like, what? Well,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, yeah, no, definitely. But I mean, I have so many questions for this person, but that on face value, it's amazing. Like, that's really cool.
What was I going to ask you before? I don't know how much other stuff we have to get to in a short amount of time. But I'm curious about this clitoris taboo thing in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, in what, I guess I'm just curious, like, in what forums or fora or it's whatever word, it's gotta be forums, this was mm-hmm. discussed. Cause I feel like my concept of the way the 40s was sexually and the 50s and really any time before the 60s was that it just wasn't spoken about mm-hmm. generally mm-hmm. in society.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never read anything about the clitoral stimulation and enjoying that, meaning you're a lesbian. So I'm just really curious, like, where that comes from.
Well, I don't have my sources in front of me.
Okay.
But I will make a note on this piece of paper to find out the source, because I'm curious, too. But, I mean, you can imagine what just hearing that the only true orgasm for a woman is vaginal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's still a thing.
It's funny. Is it still a thing?
Oh, yeah. You know how many women are like, yeah, I only get off my clit. I mean, I thought for years that I was supposed to have vaginal orgasms, and I didn't understand. I mean, I got over that one earlier, I would say, than a lot of people that I've come across. But, you know, if you don't come across information or someone saying, hey, clits are awesome, it's totally fine. Like, women often will find that if they're not having, or partners of women will, like, have this feeling like, but I haven't given her that vaginal orgasm. I'm not the lover I hope to be. And it's just like, dude, seriously.
That's true. I've had that thought. Sure.
I think I've had one vaginal only, no external clit stimulation. And it was just major G-spot play it was just a magical moment. And some people, I mean, the clit, you know, goes down and around. I mean, orgasms are orgasms. I actually had
Sandra's
a neck orgasm.
Sandra's getting flustered just thinking about the clit. That was funny. You were like,
there's so much. There's so much anatomy.
You had a neck orgasm? Is that for real?
I've had a neck orgasm once.
What is, what?
Yeah, it was.
That's really crazy.
Yeah. And I met someone recently at a class who can have an orgasm from playing with your elbow.
Wait, you can't just glaze over the neck orgasm. How'd you have the, how did,
you know what? It was, I was with a partner who was very good at listening to the body. you know, like just the minute you're like, oh, and like, and not trying to push it farther, and you know, just really staying with whatever that sensation was, and it just kept building and building because they weren't moving away or trying to get crazier or fancier, just continued to just be as slow and steady and soft as they had started at.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I just felt this, yeah, it was like a whole body release. It was really, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, porn crazy. It was just like, I mean, afterward, I was like, dude,
like, that I need to figure so it out. So cool.
Yeah, it was good. Ah, memories. Okay, so to wrap it up, one other thing that I'm really excited about someone's doing, because orientation is not something that's greatly understood. And one thing is that a question that I heard posed actually at the Western Region Sex Science Conference 2 years ago was, does a gay male and a straight woman find men attractive in the same way? Do they have the same orientation or do they have different orientations?
Yeah.
You know? And so, let's see, what's his name? Dr. Jim Weinrich. He's done attraction research, and it was so much fun because he basically had gay men, straight men, bi men, and the same for women, rate people that they were attracted to, or like the idea of like, oh, small breasts, large breasts, small butts, large, you know, thighs, muscular torso, on males, females, like basically just rating body parts. And it's a really complicated, and I can't even get into the numbers, and I don't fully understand. I mean, it was a really intense, and there were two surveys 14 years apart, and so then he was doing like a, you know, time relation thing. It was a really in-depth talk. But I really like the fact that he found that straight women and gay men do tend to find certain types attractive in the same way, and that straight men and lesbians tend to find women attractive in the same way. Like, there were certain types that they sort of were into. But bi men was the only group that tended to to like other men for different reasons. Like, there was just this really interesting thing where they didn't fall into the patterns that other orientations fell into.
It sort of makes sense to me, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So, I mean, now I am just grossly, like, oversimplifying a very in-depth thing, but that's what I took away. And oh, by the way, instead of calling people gay, straight, whatever, you can call someone who finds women attractive a gynophile, and someone who finds men attractive an androphile. So and he laughs. Yeah, no, you can laugh.
Yeah.
I give permission. But it's
well,
so,
you were
it's
so excited
cool.
about it.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It's so cool. Anyway, it's so much, and then there's a million things. So for that, I think I feel like I got a little bit off my chest, Dave. Thank you for listening.
Hey, you're welcome.
Oh, it was so interesting. It was the best. Anyway, so I feel a little guilty that I cheated on you and interviewed people without you this weekend.
Yeah, Sandra. Yeah. That was great, by the way. No invite, Katie. It's me and Katie sitting in my house alone for months. She didn't even call. No call. I mean, it's totally fine. I'm glad you had fun.
I missed you. Yeah.
We didn't miss her, right, Katie?
They're all shaking their heads. It's fine.
It's fine.
And there was a party Saturday night, and I got to see a few women ride a Sibian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's
this is something I've never seen in public. Yeah. I've seen on the tapes, on the interwebs. Mm-hmm. The internet has tape of that. And internet.com.
We'll have to fix that, Dave.
Yeah.
We will have to fix that.
Yeah.
But for now, I'm going to segue into my interview with Dr. Christopher White, who does a lot of wonderful work up in the Bay Area, and he's about to list off his bio stuff, so he'll do that, because I'm just like, you're just awesome and know everything about everything. Oh my God, tell me things. So we geeked out in his hotel room a bit in between sessions. I had a blast.
This interview is actually me pretending to be Dr. Christopher White, so follow me on Twitter.
All right. and on that note, Twitter at sexnerdsandra.com. Wait, what am I saying? At
sexnerdsandra. What was that?
I don't know.
That's like the email address that people write a message to if they want to know what your Twitter account is. If you would like a tweet to show up on my Twitter account, email Twitter at sexnerdsandra.com. Hi, I'm Sandra. Never used the internet before.
Oh, God.
What's an iPad? Sex Nerd Sandra.
Oh, God. Live tweeting all weekend was such a thing. Twitter at Sex Nerd Sandra.
Yeah, email me at internet at phone number.com.
Where can people find you, jackass?
I'm at Twitter at DaveToTheRoss.com. Oh, my God. That was incredible.
Okay. Well,
Microsoft / www. That's me.
Shut up. All right. On that note, enjoy the second part of the podcast.
Bye, guys.
All right, sex nerds. We're back at the Biltmore Hotel for the Quad S Western Region Conference. I'm here with Dr. Christopher White. Can I call you Chris? What do I get to call you tonight?
Call me Chris. Call me Chris Andrew.
Okay. Excellent. First name basis. I'm in, guys. Okay. So I'm talking to different people here and hiding in there. You have a fabulous, an extra fabulous hotel room, actually. Like, it's very luxurious. When I look at your bio, I'm always like, well, he knows everything about everything you run. Actually, tell me, what do you do? Tell us all how fancy you are.
Okay. I'm currently unemployed. So if anybody has any tips for jobs, please let me know. I was formerly the Director of Education and Training at the National Sexuality Resource Center at San Francisco State University, where I ran a summer institute for 4 years, which was basically people who were undergraduate and graduate students. Sometimes we had people who were working in the field, but mostly undergraduate and graduate students who would come to San Francisco State University to supplement their education in classes in sex and sexuality. They usually only had one or two options at their home institution, so they would come and spend the summer with us and get to meet world-famous sex researchers and scholars and also spend a summer in San Francisco or a month in San Francisco.
I personally wanted to do that program, so is it not happening anymore, or is it that you just walked away from the program to do other things?
I walked away to do other things to pursue. It was time for me to move on. And it is still happening. They're doing it this summer. I don't know what's going to be the summer after that, but I know that it is happening this summer. If you go to what is now Craigs, CREGS.SFSU.EDU, that is the Center for Research and Education on Gender and Sexuality. They have changed their name. And so go to Craigs.SFSU.EDU, and you can find out more information about that. Yeah.
So sex I know that they're aspiring, all you sex nerds.
Yeah, it's a place to go. So now I'm doing a number of different things. I'm doing some consulting work. I'm working with different type of agencies, immigration agencies, domestic violence agencies. I'm doing some gender and sexuality training type work, consulting work. I'm teaching a class at Widener University. If you don't know Widener, it's another school that does human sexuality education programs and sexual counseling and therapy programs in Philadelphia. And a lot of students actually commute on the weekends. A lot of their classes on the weekends, so students commute.
Yeah, Jamie Waxman, who's been on the show a couple times, is a student there getting her PhD. You sound like a very busy man with lots of things to do.
It's amazing how busy I am considering I've been unemployed for the past 6 months.
Well, you're also, I mean, what are you, like, Mr. Big Boss on campus here at the conference? I mean, you're like the president, chairman. What are you here? Like, you're one of the people really important running around making sure everything's okay.
Yes, I am the president of the Western Region for the Society for the Scientific Study of Sexuality. And one of my responsibilities as the president is to make sure that we have our regional meeting. So the reason I'm running around all the time is because I'm working with my co-chairs, my program co-chairs, and our conference chair, and all of the committees that and the hotel staff that work to make this conference happen. And, of course, there's problems that we run into all the time. I'm also the co-chair for the for ASECT meeting. It's happening in June. That's the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. It's happening in Austin from June something to June something. I want to say June 9th through June 12th or 13th.
That sounds about right. I've booked my plane ticket. I'm still like, let's see if I can scrounge around for buying the actual ticket. But yes.
Well, you can do some volunteer work too. I think there's still volunteer opportunities. It's also one of the things I'm really excited about, besides the fabulous speakers like Amy Shallett, Deb Levine, who's at ISIS, the Internet Sexuality Information Service. Amy Shallett, who just had her book come out, Not Under My Roof, that looks at Dutch teens and American teens and compares, you know, their sexual behaviors and their sex education practices. Bishop Yvette Flunder, who's going to talk about race and religion and sexuality. She's amazing, from the Ark of Refuge in San Francisco. And we're also going to have a burlesque troupe called the Jigglewatts that are going to be performing on Friday night, and I'm really excited about that.
Excellent. I do
nothing
love
like boobies, you know. I'm like, as a gay man, I love boobies, so it's one of those things.
It is one of those things. Gotta love a push-up bra.
So that's what I'm doing. That's what I do.
Excellent. Right. I like that we finished off that bio and explanation with boobies. Sexual literacy is one thing that I know that you're involved in. Mm-hmm. And to me, that means, just from reading that phrase, is helping people process the signals they're getting from culture and being able to sort of have a better framework to understand the world and the sexual energy that's being thrown around. But it's a lot more than that, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So sexual literacy it was actually coined by Dr. Ruth Westheimer in the 80s, and then Dr. Gil Hurt and the National Sexuality Resource Center were one of the places that really took that and tried to build that concept up and sort of get the message out there about it. And it's been catching on over the past 10 years or so. And what it's really about, you're right. So, you know, one of the things, if you think about health literacy and the health literacy movement, that's really been about helping people be able to communicate with their doctors and other healthcare providers, be able to make sure that labels on medications, whether they're over the counter or from the pharmacy, are easy to understand, easy to read, are in multiple languages, have pictures if you're not able to read. Mm-hmm. So it borrows from that. So you think about doing that the same thing with sexuality, being able to talk to your doctor or healthcare providers about your sexual and reproductive health, being able to access the goods and services that you might need, and knowing where they are, feeling empowered, feeling like you can go, for example, to a sex toy store and buy a vibrator if that's what you want to do.
Taking the shame and stigma away from the natural, food, shelter, sex, right?
I like to say that I think some of the things that we really strive to do in life as human beings, we're really focused on eating, sleeping, shitting, and fucking. There's peeing in there somewhere too, but eliminating shitting, I think that, but fucking is a big part of it. And we spend a lot of time and energy trying to do those things and try to do those things more efficiently and with the best food and with the most attractive people and, whatever that means to individuals. So it's a huge part of life. But unfortunately, there's a lot of shame around and doing those things, all of them really, except for sleeping. There's not a lot of shame around sleeping, but there's, particularly fucking.
Can you imagine though? I'm so sorry about my nap. You caught me.
Such a bad person for sleeping for 8 hours. If we could get 8 hours of sleep. So there's so much shame and so much guilt. And, one of the things that's come up a lot at this conference that sort of relates to this concept of sexual literacy and sexual health promotion, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second. But this conference, there's been two presentations on sexual addiction and what that means, and the new DSM and the hypersexual disorder diagnosis that's being included.
Wait, so that's the book that your psychologist looks at to figure out exactly what's wrong with you and how to bill your medical company.
It's really the thing that they have to, the codes they have to put down to make sure that they can get paid when you come in with your problems. But it's also something, what's been really interesting about it, most sexologists, sexuality researchers, sexuality educators have sort of a very negative reaction to the concept of sexual addiction, because for most people, what they're experiencing is the shame and guilt of engaging in sexual behaviors, feeling guilty about it, beating themselves up about it, causing stress in their lives, and then engaging in those behaviors again to sort of self-medicate. But they're still getting pleasure from it. They're enjoying doing it, which, from what I've learned this weekend, which has been amazing, that if you are a sexual addict, you're not continuing to experience the pleasure of the sexual activity.
Right. The pleasure has turned into wanting, or the craving. What was it that one turned into another?
Right. So it went from wanting to needing. And I think the way that one of the best ways that it was put is that it's one of the case studies that was given today, that the guy talked about looking at pornography and masturbating to pornography, that it was no longer enjoyable. It was no longer fun to look at porn. It became work looking at porn and masturbating. And there's a big difference there. So, I think, and it also gives, clinicians, educators, different people the ability to say, okay, you're not a sexual addict. What you are experiencing, shame and guilt. And, there's things that we can focus on how to make, help you make healthy decisions around your sexuality and your sexual behaviors. So let's bring that then to sexual literacy and sexual health promotion and what that means. And the paradigm that we use for sexuality research, for all of the sexuality education that we do in this country, if you think about the places that get the most money, the types of funding that's really available, the organizations, for example, the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, all of the HIV prevention, HIV money, research money that goes out there. And not that those aren't important things, but they're very much focused on just preventing unwanted pregnancy or even preventing wanted teen pregnancy in some cases. Preventing HIV and other sexually transmitted infections.
It's about avoiding negative things, yes, instead of being proactive about a thing that we do.
Right.
It's like if food education were only avoid food poisoning, the end, like we didn't talk about, like great ways to make a...
That's a really good example, actually, because if you think about the way that we think about food, when we talk about eating healthier, we don't talk about just eating crappy food. We still talk about eating food that's delicious to us, because it's not gonna work if we just start eating lettuce and nothing else, right? So we still want, you know, maybe you don't need 2 tons of salad dressing on it, but you could still have salad dressing on your lettuce then.
And salad dressing is like light spanking, you
exactly,
know?
There you go, exactly. So, you know, one of the things that's been really important to me is trying to get educators, researchers, anybody who's doing work in the field of sexual health, sexuality education, or sexual rights, sexual and reproductive rights, is to think about how do we shift from this disease prevention model to one that is more about holistic sexual health promotion. And by that, I mean, because your sexuality is not just the act of having some sort of sexual behavior, where it's oral sex, anal sex, vaginal sex, whatever people are doing. It's also part of your personality. It's part of who you associate with. It's where you go. It's all these different aspects of your life, right? It's also spiritual. It could be religious. There's psychological and emotional aspects to it. So if we really look at how do we become people, you know, as a whole person, as a whole experience, we can experience our sexuality in a positive way. What does that look like? And it's not just removing the guilt and the shame. It's also making people feel like they can enjoy their sexuality, their sexual behaviors. You know, some of the things that, and I think, and you know, and there's evidence from other areas of health promotion that if you focus on the positive aspects of health behaviors, you actually diminish the negative outcomes. So
wait, so yeah, that's a big thing to unpack.
Yes. So if you, for example, focus on the positive aspects of exercise and eating well, then instead of focusing on the negative aspects of it, instead of avoiding what you don't want to eat, having to do exercise that is painful or difficult, you find physical activity that's enjoyable and that you want to do. You find food to eat that is also you enjoy eating and is healthy, to live a better life, as opposed to, you know, restrictive diet and exercise that you want to do, right?
I'm imagining instead of like a stay fit and healthy class, be like a don't be fat class, yeah, you know?
It's exactly the same thing. I mean, that's, you know, we do have obesity prevention programs, and it's, you know, that's sort of a similar paradigm, but we've seen that switch. And I think with sexual health, if we start teaching people how to be sexually healthy and how to engage in the behaviors that they desire to engage in, giving them the agency to do that, giving them permission to engage in those behaviors, and giving them the tools to engage in those behaviors in a healthy way, then we will see the positive effects increase, and as a result, see the negative outcomes decrease. So we'll see less disease, and we'll see less, you know, because one of the things that happens when people make unhealthy decisions about their sexuality, their sexual behaviors, whether it's not using a condom, you know, or not using contraceptives, which are probably the major ones that I would consider, because I don't think that some of the other ones that they talk about, such as multiple partners, is really that big of a risk factor. I know other people might argue with me, but I think that it's okay to have multiple partners, and you can...
You're in a safe place here, Chris. We are all okay with multiple partners.
And that, you know, but even people who enjoy engaging with multiple partners, often it happens after you've been drinking, taking drugs, you know, when you've got to get yourself in that comfortable position, even those of us who are trying as hard as we can to be sex positive and promote, you know, sex positivity, it's difficult for us sometimes because we feel guilty and we feel like we're doing something wrong. And it gets easier if you've had a few drinks or you've smoked a joint or whatever, you know?
I feel guilty because I'm not fabulous at it.
Well, then there's that. But that's what but that you can always improve. Right. You just keep practicing. So you just keep doing it more and more. Okay. So see, that actually fits into the paradigm of let's have more sex and healthier sex and, you know, indulge ourselves. I mean, I think life is short. We spend way too much time restricting ourselves and not enjoying our lives because we have some fucked up puritanical idea that the road to enlightenment or some bullshit, heaven or whatever, is through abstaining from anything that brings pleasure. I don't live my life that way, and I don't think we should. I think it's actually bad. So back to sexual health promotion. So
no, I was really into that tangent, so I'm into it. But yes, sexual health.
So I want to give an example of a few years ago, I went to a conference and there was this guy who was presenting on, I think the title of his presentation was something along the lines of online bareback sex, or young gay men and online sex barebacking and HIV risk, right? So he goes through his whole presentation, talks about these 25, you know, young men that they found online and they interviewed about their online sexual behaviors, mostly like meeting guys online and then hooking up or whatever, right? So they asked them, you know, have you ever engaged in unprotected anal intercourse after you've met someone online? And they, of course, some of them said yes, most of them said no, which is common. It's the same numbers we see in anybody you ask when they engage in unprotected intercourse of any kind. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It happens. None of them identified as barebackers. None of them were going online seeking bareback sex. Not that there aren't people who do that. It was a label that was, we used to call it unprotected anal intercourse, particularly when we're talking about HIV prevention in men, because it's really, the term is really only used for gay men. You hear it more and more with straight people now, but it's...
I don't think I've ever used the term like yeah, bareback my vag. Like, I just no. haven't.
Bareback is only about gay men and anal sex. And the reason it was created was a way to demonize gay men and their sexual behaviors. And yeah, because it's just, you know, sometimes you use a condom, sometimes you don't. And should we all use condoms every time we're having anal sex? I don't know. Depends on who it is and how long you've been having sex with that person and other risk factors.
Fluid bonded.
Right. All sorts of stuff. There's all ways to think about it, right? So anyway, so he goes on and he gets, you know, his conclusion. He's like, well, what we did find, so there's no, he didn't find that they were part of a bareback community. He didn't find that they were seeking bareback sex online intentionally. He did find, when he asked them, well, what were they doing? Why were they in these online spaces? And they said, well, they were trying to get laid, find sex. They were trying to find a boyfriend. And they wanted to fall in love.
Aww. We all just want to be loved.
And so my reaction is, so why was this not young men online looking for, why was the title of his presentation not then young men online looking for love, sex, and relationships? Because that's what they were doing. And then you could talk about sometimes they had unprotected anal intercourse, and that is a risk factor.
So wait, what was the title again?
I would have called it...
What did he call it?
He called it Young Men Online Barebacking and HIV Risk.
That's so messed up. Like, I'm living a good life, but I lied that one time. Liar face. It was just...
It's a really... But that's the way, you know, the way that the funding mechanisms work, the way that the government works, the way that our culture works. I mean, if you start saying stuff like, you know, teenagers having good sex, or not even teenagers, college students having good sex reduces the need for abortions or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think it would, actually. Mm-hmm. People are going to freak out because they're going to be saying, you're teaching people how to have sex. You're telling people it's okay to have sex out of wedlock, whatever that bullshit is. And we're like, and I'm like, yes, that is okay, because people are doing it and they're feeling guilty about it. And when they're feeling guilty about it, they're getting drunk or they're not taking a condom with them and they're horny and they're in the moment and they're drunk, and nobody's going to stop and go down to fucking Walgreens and get a condom when you're already naked.
I did force someone who had me over and didn't have condoms to go to 7-Eleven and get condoms.
Good. Were you naked already?
Oh, yeah, we were naked. And I was like, are you serious? but most people not going to do that.
They're not going to do that, especially if you've been drinking, mm-hmm. or you're high. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you're going to be like, whatever, fuck it. And which is another interesting thing. It's another, completely unrelated, but
I loved Handies.
I have this. I'm really anti-dieting and anti-restrictive any kind of behaviors. I'm more about living a good life and doing things that you want to do. That includes being physically active, eating well, getting sleep, stress reduction, all those, you know, having good sex, all those types of things. So when I was in grad school, I was taking horrible, you know, health behavior theories classes that you have to take to so that you can recite it back, and they'll say, you know, say now you can call yourself doctor. We're studying all these things, and I was like, you know, one of the things that I feel is really missing is this concept of, well, what do you do when you've quit smoking and you do have that one cigarette? Are you say you're not going to drink for a month and you go and you have a drink, or you are dieting and you have a rough day and there's a pint of you're in the store and there's the Ben and Jerry's right there, so you pick it up and you take it home and you're like, I'm just going to have one bite. So you have that one bite and you're like, oh, that was really delicious and that made me feel better. And then you have another bite. And you're like, oh my God, that was so good. And you're like, God damn it, I was supposed to be dieting. And now I've started eating this ice cream. Well, fuck it. I'm just going to eat the whole thing. Which I think is what I've called the fuck it line. So once you've actually crossed the fuck it line, you're like, you don't care anymore. So why even put that line there? Why even put that line there?
Right, because you're breaking some sort of invisible wall. And then after that, you're like, well, we're here. We might as well just
go
all the way.
And you feel guilty and you feel shamed. And you start the whole process over again. Same thing with sexual behaviors. You're going to say, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to pick some guy or girl up at a bar. Or I'm not going to go cruising for sex. Or I'm not going to do whatever. And then you do it. Or you go and you're like, I'm at the bar and I'm making out this guy. We've already made out. I've already put my hand down his pants. Fuck it. I'm going to go home with Evan and fuck it. Sorry.
The fuck it, let's just fuck it line.
And then so what? You had a good time.
If it weren't so taboo, it's just like if alcohol were legal at an earlier age.
Right.
We'd all be a lot less drunk as teenagers because it's not as a big deal.
Possibly.
Well.
I think there's a bigger, I think there's a bigger issue around the guilt and shame and the puritanical thing that, yes, I think you're right, but I also think, you know, with drugs, with alcohol, with sex, with anything, because there are pleasurable things that we do and then we're told that we are bad people for doing those things, then we feel guilty about it, so then we do it more, and so it creates this vicious cycle. So I think it is part of it, but I think that we get in these shame spirals around what we're supposed to do, and you know, I think if we had healthier attitudes about, you know, being okay with, you know, going out and getting drunk, and you're not a bad person because you drink, or you're not a bad person because you have sex. I mean, this sounds like I'm encouraging. If you want to use drugs and drink and have sex, then
live your life.
Exactly. Do it responsibly. Learn how to do it responsibly. That's what it's all about, right? And that's what this whole idea of like sexual literacy and sex health promotion, see how I brought that back, is really about. Learning, helping people get the tools, the information, the access, empowering them, the social access, the financial access, knowing where things are to really help them make those decisions and make good decisions about their lives and let them live the lives that they want to live without the shame and guilt. And I think through that, we will see changes in the way that we behave. I mean, we're talking about a cultural shift in a very diverse, giant nation where we have people who are diametrically opposed to the idea of that and want to see people absolutely never drink, never do drugs, never have sex. I don't know. Eat a lot of bad food and get fat, not exercise also.
Right. There's a lot of carrying around a lot of anger there. It's frustrating. I mean, I have listeners of all sorts in all sorts of small towns. Uh-huh. I mean, they're just – I love – we have such a diverse listenership. And everyone's really excited about being sex nerds and sex positive. Uh-huh. And I just love people who listen because they're all very intelligent and have these very real experiences that I identify with. And so I feel like – my show's only had it's only been out for about 8 months and it's had over 1 million listens. So I know that like people are really tuning in and I don't know. I feel like the shift is already happening.
Yeah.
But it's letting it breathe.
Well, people really want it. And you know, I think you live in Los Angeles, I live in San Francisco, people who live in New York and, you know, in different places where it might be a little bit easier to do it because there's more people who support that idea, you know, because we're not the real America. And for those of you, that's a joke. For those of you who are living out there in the real America, it can be harder. But, you know, I think that that's where a lot of the work has to be done. And that's where people can really make change in their lives. So if you're out there in small town America and rural America and you're trying to fight what seems like an insurmountable fight, you got a lot of work ahead of you, but you can do it. And you can learn to live your life the way you want to live your life that makes you happy. And, you know, I think it's – we all have to do it. It's not just people who live in big cities, big liberal cities, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and for me, I mean, I realize it takes bravery, but a lot of those people who live in small towns need to be the role models just to be incredibly comfortable. Like, yeah, porn is fine. Yeah, why not contraception for people who – I mean – like, you know, just being able to acknowledge, like, when you see stuff on Fox News in a bar and, like, everyone's, I don't know, I just, oh, it makes me so angry.
What bars are you hanging out at where Fox News is on?
Oh, I'm just imagining, like, a small town.
America. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, like, all the contraception stuff, acting like people don't have sex for pleasure. I mean, it's
when they're all
just
doing it. I mean, when everybody in the small towns is also having sex for pleasure. And
what else are you going to do in a small town? I know, I have friends from small towns.
I grew up in a small town. I know what I was doing when I was 16. Wasn't, you know, doing my homework, and I was driving out in the country having sex with people.
I want, like, people to just start slapping bumper stickers on the cars. Like, people have sex for pleasure, period. Deal with it.
Absolutely. And to give people permission to talk about it. You know, the thing is, I think that when people start talking about it and when they find other people in their communities to talk about it, they start realizing that they're not alone. And one of the things, I mean, and seriously, you guys, one of the things that you can do is try to go to these summer programs. There's a summer institute in Amsterdam. There's the one here. Try to find opportunities to go and meet, like, go to ASEC conferences, go to QuadS conferences. You know, there's ways, if you can go and you can start finding people, you will become empowered by that experience. You'll make connections. You'll build your network. You'll be friends on Facebook. You'll start finding resources. You'll start finding other people who think like you do and who can help you achieve the things that you want to achieve in your own community. One of the things that was the most striking for me for people who came to the Summer Institute, it wasn't, you know, what they turned in from their, you know, their studies or their, you know, whatever papers they wrote or whatever. It was that they all found what they, you know, they almost always referred to finding their families.
Aww.
It's true. It's, but it's such a powerful experience for them. It's so amazing. And
it's like Momentum Con that we had a few episodes from that. Sexscience.org, which is QuadS's, you know, because there's lots of region or two regions, Western region.
Three regions, Eastern, Mid-Continent, and Western region.
So this is a smaller regional, so you can go to one of those. I mean, especially in lots of students listen, you can always, you know, pay the student price and come in and hang out. And I have had so much empowerment and made so many friends. And then, of course, ASECT's conference, which I'll be at in June. Austin, holler.
Yeah, Austin's amazing. Lots of fun. But there's also the Mid-Continent Eastern Region QuadS meeting is happening in Bloomington in next month.
Nice.
And so those of you who are out in the Heartland, go to Heartland. Go to Bloomington.
Heartland sounds very like Heartland, like Heartland, Garland.
Heartland. The Heartland. Go to
Hotlandia.
go to Bloomington. Hang out in Bloomington. It's going to be at the Kinsey Institute. It's going to be a great program that they're putting together there.
Awesome. Well, we better get downstairs because things are about to start. More exciting things. I know. These chairs are very comfy.
I'm hiding out up here. I don't want to go back down there. It's going to be great.
Where can people find you?
They can find me. They can follow me on Twitter. I haven't been as active as I need to be. So now that I'm saying this, it'll force me to be more active. You can follow me at Dr. Chris White on Twitter. You can find me at ChristopherWhitePhD.wordpress.com. You can also just Google Christopher White sexuality, and I'm the first person that comes up. So.
Yeah. Just type in sexuality, because if not, there's a lot of Chris Whites.
A lot of Chris Whites. Yeah, if you don't type it in, you will have a hard time finding me. Chris White sexuality. I'll pop up. You'll see my little bald head and some bow ties usually. So
yeah, he's adorbs, and he's like rocking like a gingham shirt and like some sort of like
space age atomic tie thing.
Yeah, there's some atomic situation. Very cool. And saddle shoes. Do you call them saddle shoes? Oh, look at your socks.
They're saddle shoes. Yeah,
there's even some. Socks. Yeah. Checkered, awesome. Okay, you win best outfit award.
Oh, thanks. I try.
Thank you. Let's have more of a good time here and finish off our weekend. Thank you.
Thanks, Sandra.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.